So today we're going to be talking about setting limits and disciplining teenagers. I'm assuming everybody here has teenagers, which today start from the age of 6. What do they say? Or shall we say 10 nowadays, 10, 11, tweenagers we call them. And all the way up till about 25. They still call those 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds teenagers. So there's post-teens and pre-teens in the Jewish families. So my topic today was setting limits and disciplining your teenager. And the funny thing is, usually I do more standard tips for dealing with your kids, with dealing with your teenagers, how to discipline them. And something funny happened before I was doing, you know, preparing for this speech. I was at my friend's house, and I was telling her, actually it sounds like a crazy story, but I was telling her about how I was doing this thing for teenagers. And we were sitting in her kitchen, and we were having coffee. And then as she was talking, she was going through the house and cleaning up. And I saw she was finishing up some laundry, and she was bringing stuff up to her son's room, and she was picking up the different sports stuff that was on the floor, and she was making his bed. And we were just talking, and I was following her around as we were talking. And then she was, like, organizing some things in his room. And I said to her, "How old is he again?" She said, "He's 15. Why?" I said, "You're making his bed, and you're cleaning up his whole room?" And she said, "Yeah, I always do." So I said, "Oh gosh, I really feel bad for his wife." And the two of us, like, we were just talking for a couple of seconds, and I said, you know, when we sat back down, she was, like, quiet, and she was thinking, and she says, "You know, I never really thought of it like that." Now, this friend of mine is, like, one of these nurturing, loving people, and it's her pleasure. She walks around the whole day cleaning the house, putting things away from people, baking, cooking, making spreads, doing everything beautifully. And she said to me, "You know, I never really thought of it like that. He's a good kid. He's really doing well in school, and he's doing, you know, and he's rushed in the morning, and he gets on the minion bus, and she's, you know, and like I hear all these horrible stories from my friends of these boys are having trouble with this teenager, and he's a good kid, and I didn't even think about it, but now that you say that, you're right. Like, I really do feel bad for his wife also. When's he going to learn how to take care of himself and become responsible for his own things?" So we were talking about it a little bit more, and I said, "You know, I'm giving this parenting thing on what was the topic that Frank gave me exactly? It says setting limits and disciplining your teenager." And, you know, that's really this is one of the few times that I'm asked to just talk about regular teens. Usually I'm talking about the off the charts angry teen, or, you know, some kid that's really rebelling. But this is basic discipline and setting limits. I said, "You know, I think you're really right." And I started developing, and then I saw on the top of this, it says building character in our students. And I started developing this theme a little bit more by saying, you know, what we're really doing when we're raising our teenagers is that we're raising an adult. We're trying to raise the teen to be a responsible adult with good character. So if you think about that, when you're raising your kids, whether they're doing really great and they're doing everything they're supposed to be, or whether you're having power struggles with them, or they're going through a difficult time, or rebelling from certain things that you want them to do, it doesn't really matter either way. Either way, what you're trying to do, your job as a parent, if you're not just passively parenting and just doing it without thinking, is that you're trying to really develop the character in your child so that they can become a healthy adult. If you think discipline is not the same thing as punishment, so we're not talking about how to punish your teen. That's not what we're talking about. Disciplining is really teaching. So, and limits, if we can interpret what is limits, limits are the consequences, or actually the rules that we're going to put out there that hopefully will have consequences to raise healthy teenagers. And if you think about it, because after this happened, I started talking to a couple of my friends. They said, "You know, it really changes a lot the way you think about your teenager and what you're supposed to be doing with them at any given time. If your intention is to build good characters and turn them into healthy adults, then that's your intention and how you're going to be parenting them throughout whatever they're doing. So this child who might be a very good kid, he possibly might not be raised with a character to be sensitive to somebody else, because he was raised with a very loving mother who was very happy to do everything for him. It really didn't bother her to do everything for him. But how many people in the rest of his life down the line is going to do that for him? So she might not be honing enough of that sensitivity that he should be thinking what other people are doing for him, that responsibility that he should be taking care of himself in some way or another. Now, obviously, I'm not saying you can never walk in and clean up your child's room to the extreme, but all across the board, you want to see that you are developing, you're taking part in developing the character of your child that they need to be healthy kids. So that's really the more positive way I'm looking at it. What's interesting about this is it doesn't much matter if you're having a problem with your teenager. So if you're coming here with a certain one, like, gosh, I really want to get some new techniques to figure out how to deal with this specific teenager that's giving me a hard time, or if it's a kid that seems to be doing okay. I see all the time young adults that were fine as teenagers, but they still have, they're in a quandary about certain things. Especially I'm seeing a lot of kids now that are having a hard time making commitments to in dating and getting married, and they're coming to see me about certain things. There's issues that come, and we want to develop them as whole and healthy adults. You know, I don't know if anybody has read Stephen Covey's book on 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? So what he says there is you have to begin with the end in mind. And I love that, because that's exactly what I'm saying. We have to, with our kids, with our teenagers, we have to begin with the end in mind. The healthy adult, the person that has a good character, a healthy character, is what we're trying to build while we're working with our teens, while we're setting up boundaries, and while we're developing how they should, you know, what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And then in terms of setting up limits, these limits, these boundaries are made to make them more conscious adults of greater character, and the limits that we're putting around them are helpful because if they have good consequences, one thing feeds the other and they become healthier adults and healthier teenagers at the same time. So regardless of whether your teenager is acting out or whether you're just passively parenting because you don't have to deal with any specific issues, these are issues that you want to do as a responsible parent with your teenager. So what I wrote in this outline, if anybody needs, I'll leave a few over here, you can come up and get. How we build character in our kids. And what I mean by character, I wrote here, like issues that define character, a person's ability and their inability to do or not do anything, their moral makeup, their functionings in relationships, how they do their tasks, can they love, can they be responsible, can they have empathy for others? Can they develop their talents? Can they solve their problems? Can they deal with failure? Those are the groups that often we're focusing on. And sometimes the problems, I call them symptoms of the underlying character flaws that you want to focus on your children for and to try and develop these character flaws. So sometimes it's not something that they are totally irresponsible, but there's an area that they're irresponsible with. And this will also give you strength, I think, as a parent, if you look at it like this, to have the adrenaline and the energy to put your energy into making a change for your child. Because sometimes the issue might seem like, oh, I am not fighting anymore about this issue. Let me just forget about this issue. It's too much of an issue, and it's not worth it. But if you look at the underlying part of that issue, and if that issue, let's say, is schoolwork, and if I'll tell you that I think schoolwork, if a child is doing poorly in their schoolwork, often it means that they don't have a fear of natural consequences. That's a far greater concern. So if you're looking at that child and you're saying, you know what, this kid is going to get fired from a job possibly because if I don't help them hone this character flaw, then it becomes something that's much easier for you to feel like you're doing it for their best interest. So if you look at it in this way, it sometimes helps us as parents have the gumption to fight it and to just not give in because it's too exhausting or it ruins your whole day or it ruins your whole week or they fight and they scream. But if you really believe in the fact that those consequences that you're going to hold them to or the limits or the rules that you make in order to increase their potential character formation, it feels much more able to see it through. So what does character look like? Like, what are we looking to try and do? Loving. You want to raise loving children. You want to raise children that don't feel that the world revolves around them, that they are selfish beings, that everything that they do has to do with them. You know, I often see, I'll give you some examples, very loving parents, wonderful loving parents, having very selfish children. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that. Certainly in my neighborhood, I see very, very, like the most, you'll say, it's such a selfish kid, or they're doing something that just seems like they're just not, how could that be? From such a family, I know the parents, I know the grandparents, and you don't understand it. But this is exactly the point that I'm making, because oftentimes, very loving parents might act to their child in a way where, like, you know what, don't show them any anger because we only want them to feel loved, and we're not going to hold them to certain consequences because we want them to understand that they're loved no matter what, then this child goes out there and doesn't realize and doesn't experience things in the same way that another child might. So that's a very typical thing that happens with families like that. You know, if you have no limits, then you can end up, and lack of boundaries, you can end up thinking that everything is about you and being very egocentric, and that could lead to very negative things. Responsibility is another very important thing. You know, we want to teach our kids that you have to take ownership. You have to take responsibility. This is a common theme that happens in all sorts of issues. I'm sure at the end when I'm going to ask you for questions, I'll tell you that's under loving, that's under responsible. If you break it up like that and you see what is the issue, what is this problem that your child possibly is struggling with, you'll know better how to be able to deal with it. What is the symptom that they're expressing and what's the underlying need that you have to do? You know, we were talking once about boundaries, setting up boundaries. I always tell my parents when they come regarding a teenager, because if I'm going to see a teenager, I always see the parents first. And I said, kids feel much safer when they have rules. And they're like, I don't think so. I said, let me ask you a question. You ever drive up Mount Washington or one of the, if you have that little guardrail, I mean, who are we kidding? We drive big SUVs. The guardrail doesn't really help. But somehow, if there's that little guardrail, and if anyone drove around somewhere in Israel, you know, without those guardrails, it really does feel not as secure. Those guardrails make you feel secure. They really do. And that's what you're doing. You're setting up limits and boundaries to try and keep yourself secure. If you didn't have those guardrails, chances are you'd be driving in the middle of the road, not very close to where your lane would be. There's also, just to back up my theory, there was a study done with children in a playground. And a bunch of kids were playing in a playground that had a fence around it. And it was one of these new age playgrounds that decided to take the fence away because the children might be feeling jailed in or locked in. And they ended up doing a study after this because the children tended to play much closer in and didn't venture out when there was no gate around the playground. But when there was a gate around the playground, they played all the way up until the gate and felt very safe and secure. So that was an actual psychological study that kind of proves the point that the reason we make and set limits and boundaries with our kids is to make people feel safe within them. And it's very important for children for you to make boundaries. Again, from the beginning, I don't really care if you have a wonderful, great kid. It will develop their character much better if there are certain things that they know that they can do and they can't do, and what are the consequences if they don't do that. It doesn't necessarily have to hurt them. It doesn't have to turn your world upside down, but it does have to be there in order to develop healthier children. Free. Character, what another part is a person, a child has to learn to develop, to have free choices, that they are free to make choices, that they're free. You know, we often live in a society of victims where people act like they have no choice. They have to do it because this is what their parents wanted. This is what their neighborhood expects. This is what the school wants from them. And you have to raise your child like they're free to make different choices. I always go back to my examples of, I have an example of a person who was at work, who was complaining that their office was relocating, and now they're going to have to drive that much more. So I said, we start talking about choices. And this person didn't even think, like, what are his choices? He had a choice. He could leave. He could look for another job. He can use this as an opportunity. He could ask if there's another place to go. Another woman that I worked with was telling me that she works in a job where somebody drives her crazy there. They come over to her and they work and she can get nothing done. I think she's a secretary in one of the Jewish schools out in Long Island and not this far out, though. And she was telling me, she has somebody there that she just gets there. She's on her computer and then they bother her. And I said, well, do you have any choices? She goes, no, I can't. I mean, she comes over to me. What am I going to do? And we started talking about the different choices that she could do, starting with telling her that she really needs to do her work or having somebody call her, whatever it is. People tend to say they're stuck with this. This is my problem. And they forget that they have choices, that they're free to make different choices. And it's important for children to understand that they're not stuck, that they have choices to make. Initiating. Teaching the children the value of completing tasks and goals by not bailing them out and letting them suffer the consequence of their behavior. I know that sounds like French, right? I'm sure that everybody's had a teenager that all of a sudden panics because the next day something's due and they need glue or they need a note tag or they need, you know, some certain book from the library or they need, and what are we doing? Does anybody here ever go and get it? So we have to teach children that they have to initiate, they have to start tasks, they have to initiate the tasks, and they have to suffer the consequences or they're not going to learn a lesson. No child learns a lesson better than the one that comes to school and the mother didn't run the folder of homework back as a little kid. No child learns that lesson better and remembers to bring their own homework. The one, the mother that's running back, believe me, that mother complains a whole year of running back because that's what they do. That became the problem-solving technique, and that's how that child is as a teenager. And they don't learn to initiate and do their own thing and suffer their own consequences. So that's another piece. Being respectful of reality. This is really a hard one. I'm going to say something really controversial. Hard work creates great things. That's the reality that we have right now. You work hard, you get what you want. Laziness, speeding will cost you. Children today don't have a healthy respect of reality. If their father's on the board, they're going to get in. If, you know, they have enough money, they're going to be able to go here. If the parent has pull, then they'll be able to do that. Children don't have a healthy respect for, I have to do what I have to do, and then that's the way life works. And if all the time they're not taught to understand and to believe that if you put in the effort, then good things will come to you, their future as adults are going to be very dangerous. These are all, by the way, each of the things that I'm targeting are things that I work with adults on in treatment later. So many times, most of the times, these are not things that were fully developed in terms of people's characters as teenagers, and these are things that adults suffer with later. So that's why in helping our children as teenagers develop these routines, which we often so much protect them from, and, you know, the reality is kids think of, you know, speeding, even speeding with a ticket. No kid thinks like they're going to speed and they're going to get a ticket. They speed and they're going to get away with the ticket. And if they get a ticket today, it's not even considered such a terrible thing anymore. Their laziness, they figured they'll somehow get through it anyway. They don't think the same. They don't have a healthy understanding of how a respect for reality. And reality is if you work really hard, then you're going to get somewhere. And that's a lesson that they have to teach. I'm not saying that there's certain luck that people have and things change, and if you have certain pull, I'm not saying you shouldn't use it. But the lesson that children have to learn is through hard work and understanding how our society works, that if you put in the effort, then you can get something that's good. Growing. It's very important for children to see that people change. You know, growing could be growing in a career, a kid that was a black sheep turning around, pointing that out to people, a kid that was very chubby, that lost weight, that took hold of the changes that they can make, that they see that there's a growing difference in different children, not just physically, not just spiritually, but changing in general. Changing within a teenage years, it helps develop confidence that teenagers have, that they could see that they can grow and change and do new things later. Somebody that wasn't very successful that became successful, this is a wonderful trait that children have to own as well. And oriented to the truth. Obviously, this begins by parents that model the truth. The reason I'm putting oriented to the truth instead of the problem of lies is I'm trying to put it in a more positive light. But it's very important that children are oriented to the truth. But everyone has to understand that teenagers, one of the things that they do is lie. And it's inevitable that they will lie. And it doesn't mean that they're not trustworthy necessarily. Sometimes it does. Sometimes there's some teenagers that you just cannot trust. But if they resort to lying, it's because of their immaturity and their teenagehood. It's not necessarily because they're liars and they're untrusty. You want a child that's oriented to the truth. But if they're up against the wall and they have to end up lying, you want to look at why they were lying. Are they lying because there was a problem and they didn't want to tell you? I had a couple that I was seeing, and the husband was having a lot of financial trouble, and he was uncomfortable telling his wife exactly how bad things were. And I was seeing both of them, and the wife kept saying, just tell me what's going on. And he would lie to her. He would just say, like, in another week I'm going to have this, and it's going to work out fine, and it's really a minor thing, or whatever it was. And he was lying to her because he was so full of shame, and he feared her anger. He was full of shame, and he was scared of abandonment. He was really scared of what was going to happen. And this whole issue became the lie. She was like, I don't even care what happened. You keep on making up these stories. And she said to him, just tell me the truth. And what ended up happening was all of his fears became true. She was very angry because of the lie, not necessarily because of why he wasn't truthful. And this happens with kids too. They start to lie, and if the lying becomes the issue, it becomes a fear of the lying and the guilt and the shame and the lie that they had, and it wasn't even, the issue is not necessarily as great anymore. So we want to raise kids to be oriented to the truth, but when a kid is backed up against the wall, if they ended up lying, don't make the lying the issue, because chances are kids might have to lie again, and you want them to open communication with you and not necessarily shut down, hide that again because they're fearing you're going to be so angry that they're going to lie again. So again, it's obvious that they shouldn't be lying. We don't want our kids to be lying to us, but the important thing is that the safety is there to be able to communicate to us what they want to say. Okay. So what can we do as parents? What can we do as parents? So here we have, obviously, you want to build your relationship with your child. You want to set limits that stick. You want to do things with your child that's going to make sense, that you're going to say something that has normal consequences. You're not going to pick things. You want to look around. You want to look around at what other parents do, what's important to you. You don't want to end up setting up things that you just did as a kid or that seems to be reasonable, but you really want to put some thought into what your kids can handle and what they can't handle. And you want to develop consequences that you can keep. Better a small consequence that doesn't hurt so much, that's not such a big deal, but that you're going to keep, than the perfect consequence that you're going to sometimes carry through. So I'd rather see something, it's not so important that the punishment fits the crime, but that you are consistent and that the consequence that you do is seen. Because otherwise your authority as a parent is just seen as a joke and there's no respect, and it doesn't stick. So better stick to something that's small and be consistent. Be reasonable about your expectations. It's very important for children to be heard and that you be reasonable. Look around at the community that you live in, at the expectations that they're there. If you are so much different than any other parent, you have to filter that in. You have to talk to your kids to see if they can handle that, to see if they can handle that extra stress. You have to be reasonable about what you're expecting of that child to make sure that this is something that's doable. If it's not doable, then it's not even worth addressing. You're just going to end up in a power struggle, and nothing positive is going to come from it. Confrontation is very important, to be confronted and do it as quickly as you can when you're calm. So if you're upset or in a bad mood, better to wait. But as soon as you get to a calm spot, as quickly as you can, confront your teenager, talk about what's going on, put it out there. Don't let that wait too long. Don't put it off, because the kids forget about it. They're like, why are you so angry? Like the next day. It doesn't even make sense to them when it happens. So on one hand, you don't want to be reactive and impulsive and just lose it with your kids. So you give yourself a few minutes, but you don't want to wait a day or two till you calm down. And then you talk to them about it and you're really losing it because of something that happened 2 days ago and you didn't communicate anything. Some examples of good practice that helps with teenagers. I picked four things that people forget to focus on that I think are like really important skills with teenagers. Teenagers should be managing their own time somewhere in their day. Obviously, they can't manage completely their own time, especially if they're pre-driving, but if they're post-driving, they should be figuring out how much time it needs them to take things. You can talk to them. What do you think? How much time does it need you? I need you to do this. How much time is your homework now? You know, how much time do you need for here? What are your schedules? Let's put it out. What do I need to know? They should be starting to manage their own time. They should be getting themselves up. You know, everyone can buy a teenager an alarm clock. There's no reason. Most of them have cell phones. There's no reason they shouldn't be getting themselves up. And if they're not getting themselves up, they should be suffering the consequences of oversleeping, be it their principal or be it their rabbi or whatever it might be, and not getting themselves up. And if you're doing it because it saves face for you, it's not going to be a problem that you're going to win. So 90% of the time, teenagers should be getting themselves up and facing their consequences if they're not. they should be learning how to handle money responsibly. You know, it doesn't, I don't mean money like here's $20 and they handle money. I mean some sort of, whether it's an allowance, whether it's a bank account, whether it's learning how to trade. I mean, different teenagers are up to different things, but it's important to they understand the skills of money and how to use money and how to save money, especially younger teens. It's important that they waste some of their money, because if they don't waste some of their money, if you stop them from wasting some of their money, they're not going to learn the lessons like we as adults don't learn until we buy something that we didn't like, and the next time we say, I'm not going to buy that because I know I messed up last time with it. They need to do that, and it's wonderful lessons. And the fourth thing here is making mistakes. They must learn how to make mistakes. We must accept the fact that they make mistakes, embrace their mistakes. Their mistakes are there so that they learn how to grow and how to change and how to become other, you know, a better adult. And that really should be almost like a comment or a mantra that you have in your house that, you know, mistakes are made to learn from. And after you sit and you talk to them about some issue or some problem, at the end of the problem is like, but mistakes are made to learn from. It should be like a family motto. You know, adults can use it on themselves as well. But for kids for sure, so that they understand, you know what, we're just trying to help you. Mistakes are made to learn from. You really messed up here, but there's a future. We can get past this, we can move on, and we can, you know, make things happen and do things well. One last thing I was going to say, okay, and enhancing communication skills. Okay, so one technique that I'd like to tell you about, because I wanted to write a book, but I just don't have time. I used a certain technique with teenagers, and now I'm using it actually maritally with communication that really seems to work. So I always like to put it in, especially when people have teenagers, how to do this. What I basically do, it's quite easy. I did it in therapy, and I taught it then to parents, and kids really had called me back. I got a very good reputation working with teenagers, and my trick was, crazy as it sounds, was that I used to tell them that they shouldn't come. It wasn't really a joke. If I felt I couldn't work with the kid or the kid didn't want to be there, I would tell the parents the truth. Your kid doesn't want to be here. They really don't want therapy. Yeah, it looks like they need therapy. Yeah, you're having a really hard time, but this is not going to work. And I would tell the kid and I would tell the parents, call me back if you're ready to come in, if you want to talk about it. You don't have to tell me your whole life story, but if you want to tackle a problem, I'll be here for you. And I got calls back sometimes a day later, half the time a day or two later, and half the time, not half the time, let's say 25% didn't call back, but half of the others called back right away and started coming in to see me. And these are kids that didn't want to come in. And the other half called me back either a month or two or three or 6 months later, quoting to me, I'm coming back to you, even though my mother took me after you because you wouldn't see me, to two other people, or maybe they went to before. You know, and every Jewish parent has the expert that they took 2 hours away to, and wherever these kids are coming from. And I see a lot of kids that are far away from Muncie because parents don't like to run into anybody in their community either. So I service most of New Jersey more than I service the Muncie community. And the kids would tell me, I came back because you said, you listened to me, you heard me. So one thing that's very important is that you have to really hear your kids. And one thing that I was working on with the kids was a communication skill, a language skill. It's so hard. We get into the same routines. It's often the three or four speeches that you keep giving to the same kid over and over and over again. And what I started doing was, instead of having that repetitive speech, I would tell the parents to go with their child, talk to them about something that was bothering them on a day that they were happy and the child was happy, to a place that they enjoyed, and then pick some kind of reminder of that conversation that would then be the new word in their language for whatever the issue was that they were discussing that day. So let's say they were sitting in Starbucks and they were having hot cocoa and they were talking about the fact that this child loses it, can't express himself, curses everybody in the house, goes up to the room and slams the door. And this has really been bothering the father, and he's concerned about his expression of communication, and he's concerned about his temper and his anger, and he really wants him to go for therapy, and he wants him to control himself. And the teenager would say, well, I'm just sick of this with you and Dad. I'm sick that you constantly, you know, not listening to me or treating me like a child or whatever the issue might be. And the dad would say, look, do you understand my feelings? And he'd say, yeah, I understand your feelings now, but you're not angry at me now. So, okay, so let's calm my feelings. I'm having a, you know, cappuccino, let's call my feelings cappuccino. And the child would say, okay, well, how are you going to call my feelings you know, about how I can't stand when you do that to me and you yell at me in front of the whole rest of the house and you embarrass me, whatever his feelings might be. And I'll say, well, we'll call that hot cocoa, you're having hot cocoa. Okay, and that's it. Now there's two new words in their vocabulary. And I say, use it. Use those words. And the kids would start using it and the parents would start communicating. So instead of, it's very hard to say to a kid, you know, cappuccino, and get really angry and give that whole usual speech. And this was working amazingly well, really amazingly well. So I just want to throw that out to you. If you have teenagers that you have a hard time communicating certain things, or there's trends of things that you keep doing, because what you're doing is you're giving your kid a reminder. You're talking, and what's the association with that reminder is, I love you, I'm out for coffee with you, I really want to build our relationship, I really want things to work with us, we've had good times together, don't, you know, just because this is a bad day, this, you know, and that triggers in that one word. If you don't believe me, try it with a spouse. It's amazing, amazing results I've had. People called me back, and now I do it a lot with marital work, especially when things really bother, and there's always trends that you pick up, and the more you expand your language, and you should know, it's wonderful for the other kids in the family. They think it's fabulous when the parents are saying secret words to each other and the kids have these words to each other. Nobody gets upset. It feels very special and exciting and cute. And I just think it's a very effective way of communicating. So I suggest this as one. The other thing that I'll just quickly tell you, and then we can go through if you have any questions, is I don't want to just give you this speech about character and problems. I want to tell you how to implement, how we can implement doing this with our kids. How can we put to work setting these boundaries in place? What could we do? So I have six things that I jotted down, six things we have to do in order to get through setting up these new boundaries with our kids about responsibility and sensitivity, etc. The first one is that we have to see three realities. We have to see three realities within our children. The first reality is that our kids are not perfect. You wouldn't believe, even parents that come to me with their kids for problems with their kids, that they deny or rationalize their kids' problems so often. So like, you know, some kid that smarts off, even though they might realize their kid's smarting off, part of them feels like it's also their sense of humor. They'll even tell me, yeah, he has a tendency to smart off, but it's also his sense of humor. You know, this is the way he is. Or instead of a lazy guy, well, he's not always lazy, he's very tired. It's fatigue because he's so busy and he doesn't have time to clean his room and do his bed. And it's not really that he's lazy, it's just that he's tired. Or if some kid is very, really intrusive, so he's just, personality is high-spirited. You know, and parents rationalize their children's behavior, and it's important for you to admit what is the problem so that I can help this kid. An intrusive kid, a lazy, an intrusive adult, an adult that smarts off, or lazy, it's going to cost them in life. Better to learn now and lose consequences than later and lose in marriage and lose in the world, in job world, in friendship as an adult. It's much better to lose a consequence now. And that's why, like, concrete consequences are always much easier for a child to deal with than these problems in life. The second reality is the problem isn't the problem. The problem that you're seeing is a symptom of a problem. Bad grades, for example, are a symptom. It's a boundary problem. A bad grade might be a lack of concern of consequences, like we were talking about. A kid that's very controlling for other kids, they always want to control everybody else, they have a lack of respect of other people's boundaries. So you want to look at what is the symptom, what is this problem, and understand that that's not really the problem that you're looking at. You're looking at, you know, if a kid is defiant and his attitude is terribly defiant, he probably has a lack of boundary of entitlement. This kid thinks he's entitled to everything. So that's the issue that you want to focus on. The third reality is that time does not heal all. Kids don't grow out of it. They become adults with this problem. Okay, so yeah, they'll grow out of the problem. No more homework, because now they don't get homework anymore as adults. But the underlying issue, the character issue, is not something that you help them as a parent in this time of their life. And if it was formed as a child, it's that much harder to kick as an adult. The second thing is to plug in, to get support. Say, okay, I'm going to do this. I need support. Whether it's your spouse, your friends, other parents, figure out what am I going to do differently and really get support so that people can help you through it, so that you can get through it. The third thing is grow in boundaries personally. Think of the things we're talking about. Think especially of the things you want to target for your child, and look objectively at yourself and say, how do I rate in this area? You know, let me try and shore up, because kids notice. And there's nothing terrible to be honest and say, look, before I really wanted to pick on you with this, I'm really working on this too. And part of the reason I'm actually picking on you for this is because I don't want you to suffer like I suffer, if that might be the issue, you know, as an adult. I want this, and I'm going to work on it myself at the same time. And you can, there's nothing wrong with telling your child that. They'll notice it anyway. But you want to model the area that you're working on. If you happen to be wonderful in that area, which is usually the case, by the way, because that's the more irritating thing. So obviously, if you're modeling that already, then that's not the most important thing to focus on for that moment. You want to evaluate and plan. Evaluate what you're going to do and figure out what your consequences are going to be. You can involve your teenager in this discussion. That's wonderful. But first, have in mind what it is that you want. You can then tweak it, compromise, change it a little bit. But before you address it, you want to evaluate and plan it. Then you present, number five, present the plan. You present your expectations. You present the consequences. And you get feedback. And the sixth thing is you want to follow through over time. So you're going to pick on something that you think you're going to be able to help your child with. You're going to execute it, and then you're going to follow through. You're going to say, you're going to plug it into your BlackBerry, and 3 months later it's going to bing, and it's going to say, how are you doing on this issue with your child? The most important thing that I just want to leave you with before we take some questions is try and make small changes. Another thing, just as a therapist, that I could tell you working with teenagers a lot and families a lot, is that what usually makes a difference is that children see that they could survive through a change. And any change makes the whole thing different. So in a family system, if you're having a hard time with a kid, if you're going to change something about the way you handle something with that child, you're going to affect some change, because nothing is the same any longer, right? Everything is different if you've made a consistent change. I always tell people that I work on, give me an issue that you're most likely to succeed. I always go back to Rosh Hashanah, like when we sit there and everybody's davening and shul and deciding what it is that they're going to take on to try and make a difference. If you try, what is the easiest thing that I'm almost already good at, that I'm pretty good and I'm going to be pretty good at? What can I pretty much be sure that I'm going to be good at? And that's what I want you to pick to work on with your children. Because accomplishment is so important for the kids. It's important in terms of their self-esteem. It's important in terms of their changes. Doing for yourselves to be consistent, to follow through, pick something that you're pretty good at first. If that works out and you see that there's a change, great, then pick something else. That's wonderful. But if you're going to focus on the largest area, anytime I work with a child and have good results, anytime, it's because we've stopped and we've picked on something that they can manage to do. Every time they're sent to me for an item that's this big that nobody can change. Whether it's some sort of status in their family, if their parents are divorcing, or whether it's a loss, or whether it's an anger issue, it's very rare that I'm going to be able to change that piece of their environment. But if we talk and we isolate something that this child can be shown, you know what? If I put my head to it, if I take responsibility for this, the message across the board, no matter what the issue is that I have the ability within my own choices to make changes and change my environment. And even in worst case scenario, if it's the parent that's making changes, like I always tell people, you can't come to me to change him, change her, change your child. But I can tell you from experience that if you make changes in certain areas, it's going to affect everybody. So pick the changes that you feel that you can master and do well. And if you're going to try and make a change, or set a limit, or put certain boundaries within your relationship with your teenagers, put the ones in that you feel that you both will do well in, and it'll bring you closer. And from that change, you will see that you can develop more boundaries, more consequences, and a greater relationship. So good luck. Any questions? Can't be no questions. Yes?
What if you have a kid that you can't find anything that will motivate them? You know, the grades are bad all the time, but they don't really care, so it's okay. It's not motivating them to get a better grade. You know, like...
They're going to bed? What do you mean?
Whatever. Getting better grades. Like, let's say, okay, I didn't bring in your homework for you, and you failed three things, but they're okay with that. or anything like that, it's hard to identify something to motivate.
So you're looking for a consequence, you're looking for a consequence.
Right, some consequence that...
A child like that needs a consequence as a motivator, not something positive. If you can't find something positive, they don't care. You have a lot of kids like that. I don't care. I don't need that. I don't care. Send me to my room. What do I care? Like, nothing works. Right? So you need to have a consequence. If your grades are going to be below this certain level, there's not going to be camp. There are consequences. Give me 5 minutes. There are consequences. They're not necessarily ones you like doing because they hurt you. And you feel bad and you want them to be in camp or you want them home all day and la, la, la. Yeah. But there are consequences. And if you give them those consequences, they will learn. Most of the time, we don't give those consequences because it's just too much of a pain for us. Let's be honest. It's a pain in the neck. You start punishing them. They can't watch a video. Then you're stuck with a kid who's bored and is driving you crazy. Whatever the issue is, I'm not arguing that you're wrong. You were right. It is harder for you. But if you look back at what is our job as parents and what are we supposed to be doing and reminding yourself, I'm trying to create a healthy adult here. And this kid is not doing well in school. And what's the underlying symptom here? They don't really care about consequences. Is this going to be good for them when they get married? They're going to be sitting in therapy and saying, yeah. I always say, you know, we're always talking about our parents on the couch. So we may as well talk about them before they go there, right? What was it? What happened there? Well, I really never had consequences. Yeah, I did fail. What did they do? Well, nothing really. It's very different. You're not going to have a kid doing that if they're not going to camp. If they're really not going to camp, not you can win back camp now if you do this. No, stick by your consequences. It's painful, but if you put it out there and you say, what kind of adult am I raising here? What in the real world, how's this kid going to function? When people do things to them, when they become more egocentric, when they're waiting for people to pick up the pieces for them, when they don't understand why they're responsible, when they can't see it through, when they can't finish things off, you know, what's going to happen then? You always have those parents. I used to call them the Holocaust, survivors of Holocaust parents, right, that have the kid that, we love him, we'll do everything for him, doesn't matter, just show our love and they can get away with anything. And these are much more egocentric, successful human beings, but not necessarily pleasing human beings. That's a common trend. In fact, I think Germany is still subsidizing therapy for these children based on that, because they're all in therapy, because they're not getting along with their families. So this often happens. It's like so if our job as parents is to polish their character, if you're looking at it as like, okay, what's going to help this child be a more successful adult? And you can explain that to your kid. You know, I'm really just doing this because I want you to become a more successful adult. And as crazy as it sounds, if you're going to get in trouble with your teacher with homework, it's going to be a lot better than getting fired from a job. And if you're going to have to, you know, deal with not being on the team because you messed up, it's going to be a lot better for you in the long run that you were sensitive and you learned sensitivity and you're able to get along with your peers and your friends and have friends and live in a community where you're not considered odd or whatever the outcome could possibly be. And as a parent, if you keep telling yourself, well, I am reinforcing that in my child, it hurts and it stinks, but I want my kid to be a responsible kid. I want them to be a sensitive child, capable of loving and giving and seeing other people's perspectives. And all the basic things that we see that are necessary, the necessary ingredients. And you know what? These are my lists. I'm not telling you to go home with mine. Think of your own. Everybody has the right within their family to sit and just think for a second. What are you putting into your parenting? What are you trying to raise? And let it be a product of what you want to raise. Maybe that what you want to raise is not what I want to raise. We each have a right to raise the child. But are you purposely raising those kids or are they just passively just going? Are you putting in what you want them to come out with? What is the end result? What is it that you want them to be? What kind of husband do you want him to be? What kind of parent do you want them to be? And what are the necessary ingredients? We all know that those things are set when you're kids. Your personality, your character is set when you're teenaging. That's what you're doing. So if we're parents and we're not aware of that, think for a minute. What's the five really things that you want to see your kid? And what are you doing to have it? And what kinds of things are your kids testing you with so that they don't get it? And focus on those things, on what you think is important for them to come out with. But it's important to see the issues and the problems that they put forward. Look for what's the underlying thing that's coming out of it. Because all of us could live with our kids flunking a grade or flunking some tests or getting into a fight with another kid, the issue is not necessarily going to feel like it's so big. You can not deal with that. But the underlying issue, what's under that symptom, the problem, that's something that you're not teaching them. So forward parents, think what they want to do and try and make a difference. And nothing is secret, by the way. Whatever we're saying, you can tell the kids. You know, it's not, there's no secrets. You can say, look, we're parents. Just seeing things in a different way now, and I realize that by doing this for you, which is exactly, by the way, what my friend did. She sat down with her son, and he was blown away. And she just told him the truth. I was sitting with Gila, we were talking, and she just made a comment about, she felt badly for your wife. And he's like, no, Mom, you know, come on, I'll make my bed when I get married. You know, like, I'm not going to be like... She goes, but how do I know that? I mean, let's say when your wife comes back and she tells me you don't make your bed. And let's say she's not like me. Let's say she's not one of these, you know, it doesn't really bother her to go do that. So, like, I just want to say that, you know, you have to. This is something, do you realize that I spent 20 minutes doing it? What's, you know, what's going on here? I didn't realize. I thought you liked it. I thought you wanted to. I thought you... You know, and she almost loves it when she had to work on things with him. She still does. That's her nature. He's not doing well. She stays up all night helping him on projects because that's the way she is. It's wonderful, but can he do it on his own? And is he going to expect that from everybody else? What's going on there? Just asking yourselves. So, anything else? Okay, if anybody wants to reach me, I have an email. It's Gila, GILACSW at AOL. So if you have any questions or if something comes up, it would be my pleasure to correspond with you. Just remind me where we met and what class we were in. And if I could be of any help, if anyone has any questions, it would be my pleasure.
Is that you,